Welcome to my podcast, In the Driver's Seat. My name is Sonia Driver and I'm the founder of EcoTan, an Australian organic clean beauty company. Warning, this is an explicit podcast. There is swearing, maybe a lot. Come with a curious mind and an open heart and hopefully it will leave you with a gift. I'll be inviting inspiring and fascinating people into the driver's seat, people whom I connect with, and I believe you will too. I will be unraveling layers of them and their story, and that's where we'll find the gold. Buckle up, it's going to be one hell of a ride. Well, hello there, and this is Sonia Driver, and we're in the driver's seat, and today this is a really, really interesting guest. I'm speaking to sex and intimacy coach Helena Nista. Now, Helena is a sex therapist, a tantra practitioner. She's a mentor, author, speaker, and lover. She is a certified sexologist and a tantra teacher. I do have to say at this stage, I have absolutely no idea what a tantra teacher is, but honey, if you're listening, prepare. Okay. Hello. How are you, Helena?
I'm great. Hello. Thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So the reason I invited you on is because I was talking to Rebecca Holt, who is an absolute brilliant psychologist on the Gold Coast. And she said, Sonia, you know what's not talked about enough in our society? She goes, so many couples that I'm working with have issues, you know, in their sex life. And she said it's all shameful and embarrassing. She said they don't even speak it out. Their voice lowers when they want to talk about sex. She said it's as a society, we really need to be having deeper discussions around sex and as your body changes and all that sort of thing. She said, I really recommend that you contact Helena Nista. And so that's how I found you.
That's amazing.
Isn't it amazing? So you're getting out there. Everybody's talking about you. So can you just...
That's wonderful. I love talking about sex.
Can you just tell me, how did you get into this? How did you get in, become a, you know, oh, I'm going to be a sex and intimacy coach, Mum? Like, how did you, you know?
Well, it wasn't quite like that. I wasn't growing up thinking, I want to be a sex therapist. It wasn't like that. I was living sort of a normal life, had a corporate job. I was actually, I am a trained accountant, so I was working in accounting. But my personal life sort of led me towards sex and tantra because I was really struggling sexually. So from very young age, you know, or since I really started being sexual, I needed a sex therapist because I was very inhibited around sex. I was raped when I was younger, so I had a lot of repression and wounding and trauma around sex. So I was really struggling in the bedroom with my different partners. So that eventually actually led me to my accident, which what I mean by accident is the day when I actually ended up in an emergency room because of sex, because I was in so much pain after sex, I had to be taken to the hospital. And that day sort of started with the beginning of the rest of my life, because that's when I decided I need to learn how to have amazing sex. I can't struggle in bed any longer, especially that it can potentially send me into such pain again or potentially send me to an emergency room again. So that's when I started studying great sex and tantra, because I thought, you know, just for me personally, I needed to explore that topic. Then that sort of evolved into a great passion. And now, you know, like I've done so much healing, sexual healing on myself. I taught myself how to be multi-orgasmic, how to have amazing, mind-blowing sex with expansive, blissful orgasms. And I thought that I just really wanted to share that with others. So that led me to become a certified sexologist, tantra practitioner, and a counselor to help others and to spread my message of amazing sex.
That is absolutely a mind-blowing testimony right there, folks. I'm so sorry that happened to you. That is absolutely horrible. I'm so sorry. But look how you've taken that and you've turned it into something so worthy and worthwhile and valuable. And I do hear what you're saying. I think, you know, a lot of people have had horrible experiences and have trauma related to sex. So then when it comes to the bedroom and comes to being intimate, it's very hard to get out of your head. You know, I think sex is more about starting in your head. It's your head that does all these backflips, doesn't it, before it even – so, wow.
Exactly, absolutely. And I actually found that when before I started studying sex and tantra, I thought that I was the only broken person in the world, that I was somehow defective because I had all these struggles. I couldn't orgasm. Sex was painful, etc. And I thought that everybody else had amazing sex, because nobody really talked about it. You know, my friends were in my, you know, my family, the media. Nobody was really talking about sex being painful, about people struggling to orgasm or having different sexual issues. So I thought that I was the only weird, lonely, broken person who couldn't have great sex. But then when I started studying sexuality and then eventually working with clients, I realized that there's so much sexual frustration out there, which in a way is good news, because that means that we're not lonely in our suffering. It is a big issue that there are different ways that that can help us, you know, that we're not helpless because nobody else is experiencing what we're experiencing. So that means that a lot of people who struggle sexually can feel less lonely, and they can actually know that there's a lot of help available, and there are a lot of different ways to overcome struggles, problems, wounding, trauma, and to actually cultivate and create beautiful, mind-blowing sexual experiences. And anybody can do that.
Wow. Why do you think there is so much shame and embarrassment around sex?
Oh, I feel like that's really leftovers of the whole Victorian era, when sex was, or sexual suppression actually was used to control people. You know, people who are freely enjoying their sexuality, who are in their bodies, who are connected, and who are really fulfilled and satisfied sexually, they are not so easy to control. They're not so easy to be sold to. So marketing comes into it as well. You know, religion cannot control this kind of people as easily, because they don't give in so easily to fear of punishment for whatever things they might have, etc. So I feel like it's an age-old struggle promoted by different religions or social constructs, where sex is sort of pushed under the rug as something inappropriate, bad or wrong, etc. Whereas the truth is, it's a very natural aspect of any human being. We all are sexual beings. Mm. And sex is as natural as, you know, eating, breathing, working, pursuing hobbies, being active, you know, exercising, etc. It's just one of the things we do. And there's no reason why there should be so much guilt, shame, embarrassment around that, except for the part where the society over many sort of hundreds of years brought on this concept that it's somehow wrong, inappropriate, or bad to touch ourselves, to enjoy sexuality, to talk about orgasms, etc.
Oh, absolutely. Gee, we've got a long way to come. Can I say that word? Or go? We do have a long way. We haven't come very far. Oh, my God, this is going to be. We haven't really. When you think about it, we haven't. We, you know, and I just think to myself, I don't discuss sex at all to my daughters. We're now almost 18 and 15. Should I be? I don't know. Like, I pretend that, yeah. You know, I'm still pretending the stork brought them. Oh, look, I'm hopeless. Mm.
Look, I think that, you know, things are getting better. There's still definitely work to be done. You know, some of the people tell me, come on, what are you talking about? We are so liberated sexually. We're look not. At all the Beyonce fans, you know, twerking and all of that. Well, it's not quite that. You know, like people like that, I say, you know, when was the last time you came to work and you told your coworkers about that amazing orgasm you had last night?
Oh,
the beautiful masturbation. Oh. Exactly. We're, you know, sex is still covered by layer of taboo and stigma and shame, etc. Whereas, you know, if we could embrace it, when we can embrace it as a normal dinner time conversation, because it's magical. It's amazing. Life comes through sex. You know, when we get to that point, we will be able, like, sexual issues will disappear because we will be able to just embrace our bodies, our genitals, our sexual experiences as amazing, beautiful, healthy, and natural.
Well, I will try to bring it up at the family dinner table on Sunday and I'll let you know how it goes. I'm married to the most conservative man on the planet, but it's going to be great. I'm going to talk about Tantra. Just tell me, look, excuse my ignorance, what is Tantra? In my head, I'm imagining all these really weird poses and that, you know, yoga sort of poses that I'm not that flexible. So what is Tantra? What does it mean?
Okay. Tantra is a philosophy. So it's a kind of a way of being that comes from ancient India. There are some tantric artifacts that date about 5,000 years. So it's fairly old. And what we think when we hear Tantra, we think sex, orgies, weird sexual experiences, but that's not, it's not quite correct. Tantra originally embraced every single aspect of life as sacred, beautiful, and special. And what that meant practically is that it encouraged us to become more present, more mindful with every single activity that we do. You know, so whether you're drinking a cup of tea, or having a conversation with a friend, or reading a book, or going for a walk, or having sex, you should be fully present in your experience, fully mindful, and sort of celebrating your experience by maybe creating a bit of a ritual around it, bringing more attention to it, being, acknowledging the specialness of this moment you're going through. And that's the way that Tantra treats sex particularly, acknowledging that it's one of those beautiful things we do in life and that we should do it with full presence, mindfulness, even celebration. That's actually quite healing to modern society that, that has been through Victorian era and has been through all this social and religious repression, etc. So I guess that's why bringing tantric sex particularly to the, to our modern society is so amazing and healing. But it's not quite what people usually think. It's got nothing to do with orgies. I mean, you can have an orgy and do it tantrically by bringing all this awareness, mindfulness, presence to it. But orgies or weird sexual experiences in themselves, they have nothing really to do with Tantra. Tantra is just presence, mindfulness, celebration of sex and us and our bodies as beautiful, amazing, special.
Wow.
So that's at the core of Tantra.
Okay. So how do we, what's the number one question you get asked when you're working with couples or one-on-one? What is it? What's the number one question you face?
So when I work with women, the number one thing that comes up in my sessions is about orgasming, being able to orgasm, particularly orgasm during sex. Mm-hmm. That comes up quite a lot. A lot of women struggle with orgasmic. And when I work with men, the number one question is how to last longer. So gaining more control over their erection so that they can last longer and not ejaculate within the first minute or few minutes of intercourse.
So what do you say to these people? How do they overcome sexual difficulties? And, what are some of the tips that you give people?
So actually both of these issues can be easily overcome through proper conscious masturbation habits. So, like one of the modalities I use very often in my work is masturbation coaching, which is basically how I teach my clients a different, more conscious way to touch their bodies. Because the way we masturbate, that's how we sort of train and wire our bodies and wire our nervous system to respond sexually to touch. So when a woman comes to me and she's struggling to orgasm, usually that means that she's disconnected from her body. She's very much in her head. Potentially she had some sexual wounding in the past, which created a sort of further dissociation from her body. Maybe she's got poor body image, kind of issues. Maybe she doesn't like her genitals. Maybe she just doesn't like her entire body. Maybe she doesn't know how to touch herself to actually give herself a lot of pleasure. So we'll basically work on that mind-body connection, and I will basically train her how to approach her body and how to touch her entire body including the genitals, in the way that will actually rewire her nervous system and help her cultivate her erotic and orgasmic potential. Because this is something we can totally teach our bodies how to do. You know, we're not born being great lovers. We're not born being multi-orgasmic and expansively full-body orgasmic. This is something that we have a natural capability for, but we can train our bodies. We can teach our bodies how to do that, and we can do that through proper masturbation practices. And when I work with a man in a similar way, I will give him homework, basically telling him exactly how to masturbate, how to sort of train his body through masturbation to last longer, to the point where men can actually last for hours and men can have also full body non-ejaculatory orgasms, which allows them to go again and again and again without losing the erection too quickly, which is then great news for their partners because they can have sex for as long as they both want to.
Listen, you're going to be booked out for years after this podcast. I mean, wow, that's incredible. So what about sex after menopause? This is a really big issue, like for a lot of my friends. I'm obviously, I've passed my menopause in my early 50s, and a lot of my friends, and you know, when we're having a lunch, we're having a glass of wine, they talk about how sex is so painful now. And like, it's not just lubrication, that does not cut it. It's just really painful, very uncomfortable, and then sort of, it's too embarrassing to talk to their husbands about, not me because I'm a big mouth, but, you know, and then they're thinking, they start getting in their head, oh, are we losing connection? Am I not attracted? I go, no, it's not that at all. I think you need to go and see your doctor and I don't know what, but that's not what it is, you know? It all gets overanalyzed, but it's all very quiet. No one's really talking about aspects as sex after menopause, and it's completely different. You have to almost prepare for it. You can't just really get it on like you used to when you were younger. You know, you can't do that. You have to prepare your body. This is what I'm finding and what my friends are saying, backing me up, saying the same thing. That's why we've turned to wine. We're like, forget the sex, let's just have wine, because it's just, you know, there's an issue there.
And that's the thing, that your whole system changes after the menopause because of the hormonal changes that happen in the body. So there's changes on both the emotional and the physical level.
Right.
And I guess like the first thing is to actually just have more compassion to your body and listen to your body without trying to push yourself into some kind of form of how
it should be.
Will be happening for you.
Yes.
Exactly. Like you should really get rid of any should.
Yes.
When it comes to your sex life, because now that, you know, your body has gone through that change, that transformation, things happen. And you need to find a way to work with your body now. So trying to, I guess, push yourself in some kind of some form or activity that you feel your body should be able to perform, that really isn't going to work. Because your body is communicating with you and telling you things are different now. If, you know, it will be painful. It will be the lubrication will be an issue, but you know, few things that I can say here is, you know, first of all, have compassion for your own body. Don't push yourself beyond the point, you know, like to the point of pain or discomfort. That shouldn't be sort of in your sex life. But having said that, consistent sexual activity will actually help vagina remain healthy. You know, sort of in your genital area, regular massage, either your partner or yourself, can blood flow to vaginal tissue and promote that elasticity, you know. So, you know, so I'm not saying stop either.
Yes. So, you know,
having that,
use it or lose it, so to speak. I get you.
It kind of works this way, exactly. But, you know, during that activity, do things in a way that will work for your body. So using that extra, you know, lubricant, you know, coconut oil is something that I definitely recommend. But it might not work for you. So find the kind of lubricant that really works for you. And if that means reapplying it a few times, that's perfectly fine.
Can I just say, I just want to cut in there about lubricant. Okay, so people, because I'm all about ingredients. So you need to look at ingredients, because if it's got alcohol in it and obviously most of them will have alcohol in it and it could be hidden in an ingredient. That actually desensitizes the clitoris and everything. You can't feel, you can feel absolutely jack shit. So be very careful about what lubricant you use, because it just kills all. So I really feel for women, because I think no bastard's telling them, like, this cheap-ass lubricant, it's just alcohol because that's a preservative, won't go off, they don't really give a shit. And all it's going to do is numb everything. You're going to feel nothing. Mm-hmm. You're going to be feel so what, you're lubricant, like, forget it. So, okay, coconut oil, here we go.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my little tangent. That's my passion. So, okay.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. I don't really speak much about the kind of store-bought lubricants because I just don't use them. I don't promote them. I do recommend just finding the kind of oil, coconut oil, some kind of natural oil, almond oil, or grapeseed, you know, whatever actually works for you.
Organic.
So that organic. There's organic. No... Organic, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's Sonia.
But, but there's also this whole big aspect of our sexuality as menopause that not many people talk about, which is actually non-penetrative sex.
Yes.
You know, we think of saying that we should be, you know, if we want to continue having successful sex life, you know, successful means for different people, that, you know, that it needs to include penetration. Well, that's not really the case. Sex can be a lot of different things. And if vaginal penetration becomes just too uncomfortable for a certain period of time, there is a variety of other activities that are beautiful, sexual, erotic, intimate, that can bring a lot of joy and connection to the couple, like, you know, oral sex, like giving each other erotic massages, like masturbating, either separately or together, you know, witnessing each other masturbate can be such a beautiful experience for a couple. But even playing with, you know, with toys and different sexual games and just finding out what really works for you, sex can look like so many different things.
Wow, sounds exhausting.
I don't mean it.
But you know what?
I don't mean it in that way.
If you're into it, yeah, I'm just having fun. So, okay, so no, that's, I absolutely hear you. And also when it comes back to sex after menopause, and I said how you said compassion, and I really feel a level of grief and of, you know, changing my body's change so much in that area that, you know, there is a level of grief, and I feel like that we have to sort of acknowledge that and then just, as you said, then we can move on to compassion. I'm getting so much out of this today. Wow. This is amazing. Can I just go to some of the questions, because we've got a lot of questions. So on Instagram yesterday, I put up a tile and I said, okay, throw me questions and I'm going to ask you some. So do you mind if I just go through some of the questions for our listeners that have all spent the time to send in? Is that okay, Helena? Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
So number one, so I'm nervous about having sex after childbirth. Do you have any any tips?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. First of all, actually, that compassion is the first thing that comes to mind again. The doctors recommend waiting between 4 and 6 weeks, but the thing is, it's really your call when you are ready to have sex again. And when, you know, when full sexual intercourse seems scary, why not just lying together naked and just cuddling and holding each other and kissing each other, and if the desire moves you to be more sexual, maybe, you know, choking each other's genitals, maybe oral sex, maybe even intercourse. But there, you know, what people should really remove is that expectation or the pressure that this needs to lead to intercourse, this needs to lead to penetration. Because somehow sex without penetration is considered invalid or not, you know, not a full or satisfactory version of sex. Well, that's really BS, because sex, as I mentioned before, sex has so many different things. And, you know, each couple should create their own world of sexual experiences in the way that works for them. So don't push yourself. Communicate with your partner about your needs, your desires, your fears, your anxiety, so that you both really understand each other, really hear him, what he needs as well, you know, what how he's feeling, because men can feel quite rejected.
They feel nervous that they're going to hurt you. So then it gets in their head, then they can't get an erection. Yeah, so communication, absolutely. So number two, how do you, I hear this a lot. How do you get your libido back after like having kids, or if you got a like really flat out busy life? Where do we get this libido? Everybody wants that, you know, when you first get with somebody new, oh, that amazing honeymoon. How do we get that honeymoon period to stay forever? We want to rip each other's clothes off.
So the first thing is, and maybe bad news in a way, you will never get the same thing back.
Okay.
So that initial euphoria of, oh my God, she's so amazing, we're so in love.
Yeah.
Keep my hands off of each other. That only happens in the beginning. But the relationship changes with time, and what we can do is we can consciously make a decision. I want to keep my relationship passionate, intimate, full of pleasure, connection, sex, etc. So this is a decision we kind of need to make, because relying on spontaneous libido, I mean, it can happen. You can have these moments of, really desiring each other tremendously and having beautiful spontaneous sexual experiences. But if you rely just on spontaneity forever in your relationship and in your connection, sexual connection, it's just not going to work. And there's so many sexless marriages out there to really prove that point. So what I teach is that actually maintaining passion and desire in a relationship is a decision. It is something that people really need to consciously decide, I'm going to keep the fire spark in my relationship. And what that means practically is creating quality time together, organizing different fun activities, whatever fun activity or fun sexual activities for both is for both of you, whether it's giving each other a sexual erotic massage or giving each other a striptease, or a little kind of that kind of performance, or or maybe even watching some porn together. There's so many different games, or just even like having these candlelit dinners together, going away for a romantic weekend. These are things we need to do to maintain connection, intimate connection, passion and desire in a relationship, because there's too many things that will reduce that natural spontaneous desire. Being, work, family,
yes,
fatigue, stress, to-do list, all these things will completely sort of, cover and reduce the natural desire that we would be feeling.
Absolutely. I know. We do all that. We're screaming at the kids. We're washing up. We're cooking dinner. We're exhausted. Then we're supposed to, walk in the bedroom and feel like, oh, my God, I'm going to just – it's not going to happen. You have to –
Exactly. As long as we don't make sex a priority, as we, leave it till the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that maybe if we still have any time or if we still have any energy, then we might have sex. That's when sex life starts to really reduce and diminish. We need to make sex a priority and give it enough time, the way we always find time to go to work. We find time to go shopping and do other things. We need to treat sex in the same way. And that is the best way to maintain passion and desire in a relationship.
Okay, we have another question. How many times a week should a couple have sex to maintain a healthy, happy relationship?
That's an interesting question, and I really can't answer that because every couple is different. Mm-hmm. And for some couples, let's say 3 times a week is so much that they can hardly keep up, and it's actually too much and they don't need as much. For others, it's actually really barely enough and they want to connect sexually every single day. Some couples connect sexually once a week and that's perfectly satisfying for them. Mm-hmm. So it's not a number. It's not something that, we can tell people this is how often it should happen. No, it's all about your sexual satisfaction. Are you frustrated sexually? Do you feel like you're not getting enough, or do you feel like your partner is overwhelming you with too much?
Yes.
Too extensive sort of demands, when it comes to sexuality. So each couple has to work out their own number per week, per month.
So communication, this is what I'm hearing. Communication, talking about it, which is a little bit uncomfortable. Okay. Yep. We have to
expressing bring it the desire. Absolutely. Yes.
And so there is no, because I keep getting so many questions. How do I can get a better libido? Help, my libido sucks. help. I'm thinking if I can make a libido pill, which there is none, people. You know, scammers out there will be making a bloody libido pill. But then if you believe it, it will work for you because it's what's all in the.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
well, when you look at it, like the libido is affected by so many different things. And so it's not a physical thing to change. Like, for example, emotional connection. How is the emotional connection in your relationship? You know, yes. If you're angry with your partner or frustrated with him because he hasn't been doing something that he was meant to or whatever, you're not going to feel like having sex with him. Or if there's maybe some old resentment still hanging around because of something that happened in the past. You know, if you carry sexual inhibitions or wounding from the past, maybe even from before your relationship, that will still be impacting on your libido and your desire right now. So, you know, our sort of internal attitude, you know, an approach to sex and mindset around sex, you know, the connection with the partner, past experiences, what parents or society were telling us throughout our lives about sex, pleasure and our body, our nudity, etc., our own connection to our own body. There's so many layers to libido that
there is.
That's why it's just impossible to create a libido pill.
I have been noticing a lot on Instagram. I'm not saying anything about myself personally, but there's a lot of fantastic looking sex toys out there. You know, not necessarily like big stupid dildos from I remember the 1980s, like look at it, you're out. But like, I don't know, like what did I see an influencer doing the other day? It was like a clitoris suction. You know, so it's like a toy that sucks your clitoris or something. I'm going, oh my goodness, like I don't know. But apparently, you know, so there's lots of toys. So would you recommend starting with, you know, getting some sex toys? And what are your thoughts on sex toys? Or do you think it removes the physical touch? Or I don't know, what's your views about that?
Well, sex toys are a tool, you know. So as long as they are used in a way that enhances our you know, arousal, pleasure and sexual experiences, then definitely there should be used. You know, especially for women who struggle with orgasming, getting a vibrator is like the easiest way to sort of activate that orgasmic capability in the body. But there is also like the dark side to sex toys and vibrators because they can actually desensitize the body if they are abused, if they are used, you know, too often, too much. They can actually lead to loss of sensitivity.
Okay.
Or reduce sensitivity. But as these different toys, especially vibrators, are used, you know, not every single time, you know, and are used as sort of a part of the experience, but not as the entire experience, you know.
Yes.
Like I really encourage people to use their hands a lot when they're touching themselves because that provides the beautiful level of stimulation that your partner can also provide to you. Whereas if you condition your body to respond to a vibrator, then your partner just cannot reproduce that kind of stimulation with their body, so that's why so many women can actually struggle during sex because they cannot orgasm without vibrator because their partner just simply cannot vibrate in the same way.
Isn't that a shame?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, but you know, everybody can have amazing, mind-blowing full body orgasms without any toys. But you know, when it comes to toys, use them. Use the toys as much as they bring you increased joy, pleasure, enjoyment, etc. Just don't abuse them so that your body becomes desensitized.
So, okay. So, and another question, how do you get out of your head? Like, how do you switch off out of your head? This is a question that's been sent through. And I sort of can relate to that because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, what have I got to do? What have I got to do tomorrow? What am I doing now? But, you know,
like, absolutely.
It's very hard to get out of your head, isn't it?
It is. It is such a, you know, such a big problem. So many of my clients tell me exactly that same thing. They just cannot get out of their head during sex. Well, any kind of mindfulness training would be helpful, sort of a meditation practice. You know, anything, mindfulness or your ability to be present in your body with your breath, with your sensations, that is it's an ability that is sort of like a muscle. So we can train that. We can become, you know, we can train our mindfulness muscle so that it's easier to get out of the head. Because being in the head is a habit.
Okay,
and it's a habit that we cultivate every day so strongly that we just lose sort of our ability to control it, so that then our mind and our thoughts are running us, as opposed to us having that control on whether I am in my stream of thoughts right now or am I just in my body. So we can sort of lose that ability to disconnect from the head and just feel the body, which will affect negatively our sexual experiences. But any sort of mindfulness training where you're just disconnecting from the head and you're just listening to your own breath and feeling your own body, even when done for like maybe 5 minutes a day, is going to start strengthening that mindfulness muscle. It's going to start making it easier and easier for you to just let go of the thoughts and just be in the body. Because the most amazing, mind-blowing, wonderful sexual experiences happen not when we're thinking about our to-do list, not when we're worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow or whenever else, but those experiences happen when we are purely and completely and absolutely in our body, when we are so connected to all the sensations, all the little shivers of pleasure and tingles of orgasmic energy, that it just completely, we become completely immersed in that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So speaking about orgasms, so are there different, I don't even want to read this question I've got here sent in by a lady saying, is there a squirting orgasm? A squirting orgasm?
Squirting.
I'm like, okay, is that a wee? What is that?
No, it's not a wee.
Because she said that, you know, that she has a squirting orgasm. I'm like, oh, what? So,
yeah.
So, are there different orgasms? Like, can you just take us through that, the different orgasms?
Absolutely. There is many different types of orgasms, particularly for women. Women's orgasmic capabilities is mind-blowing. And all these orgasms, basically, you know, like I can categorize them into sort of external orgasms and internal orgasms.
Right.
So the external ones, that's basically the clitoral orgasm, when you rub your clitoris.
Okay.
And, you know, that culminates in that sort of sharp few seconds of intense pleasure.
Right.
That's sort of like an external orgasm in a way that the energy, sexual energy, is released from the body. So after the clitoral orgasm, we typically, you know, the clitoris becomes overly sensitive and we kind of lose that desire. And we're not really that interested in being sexual anymore. Whereas the internal orgasms, which are the G-spot orgasm, the cervical orgasm, the you know, the squirting orgasm, there's, you know, an 8-spot orgasm, full body orgasm, you know, etc. These are orgasms where that sexual energy is actually being released internally in the body. So they are experienced differently. It's not a sharp, quick sort of pleasure, but it's more of a sort of expansive sense of blissful energy, kind of rippling and expanding and vibrating through the body. I'm particularly fond of cervical orgasms because they are, like, to me, they are like the holy grail of all.
Really?
Feminine orgasms. Like, I've never had as powerful orgasms as the cervical ones. But,
well,
you know,
I think that we do really need to elaborate a little bit more for our listeners on how they can get this holy grail of an orgasm called the cervical orgasm.
Exactly.
And how do we get that? Just give us a couple of tips. Don't leave us hanging. Like, yeah.
Okay. Well, the first step is to resensitize the cervix. So the cervix is the entrance to the womb. So you will find your cervix when you sort of insert a finger or a dildo right to the back wall of the vagina.
Right.
That back wall is where the cervix is. Mm-hmm. Typically, women's cervixes are quite numb because of years of kind of mechanical pounding, you know, mechanical sort of penetration by men.
Right.
Who are kind of maybe influenced by porn. They don't know how to make love and they just have kind of that kind of quick, fast, furious, mechanical intercourse. So that's why so many women struggle or don't have cervical orgasms because their cervixes are just numb after years of that kind of treatment. So a woman who wants to have cervical orgasms, first of all, she needs to resensitize her cervix by gently massaging it.
Right.
Not all the women can actually reach their own cervix. Some women have longer vaginal canals. So if that's the case, if you cannot actually massage your own cervix, you can use a stone dildo. I love stone dildos. I have
what sort of dildo is it? What's it called? A what?
Rose quartz pleasure wand. So it's a dildo made of rose quartz.
Okay. Everyone's writing that down. He's writing that down. Yep. Rose quartz. Yep.
Exactly. So what you do is, you know, I like to apply some coconut oil, put the coconut oil on my wand, and I gently insert it all the way in so that it's touching my cervix. Mm-hmm. And then I either sort of tap the wand so that it's providing like a very gentle stimulation, or I will just simply hold it inside of my vagina and I will just feel that point where the wand is touching the cervix. In the beginning, it might feel like nothing at all. And that's what many women experience. That's what I experienced for a long time when I first started this exercise. I would put the dildo all the way in and I would just feel nothing. But I would just bring all of my awareness to where I thought my cervix was, and I would just do my best to feel it, to I guess, sense whatever sensations that might be there. Next time, I might feel just a touch more, just maybe a little bit more than the last time. And then over time, you know, after doing this practice for a few months, I actually realized that I could just insert the dildo inside of me, was gently touching and stimulating the cervix, and I would, within 10 minutes, go into a full-body cervical orgasm. And that feels so amazing. It's such fulfilling level of ecstatic, blissful pleasure that I have absolutely no words to describe it, other than it just feels like ocean of pleasure.
Wow, ocean of pleasure. That's a name expanding for a dildo. Let's just... Ocean of pleasure. So this is what we're after, ladies, a full-body cervical orgasm. That's what we're after.
Yeah,
and it doesn't discriminate against people that have had in menopause, or does it discriminate ages, anything like that?
No, nothing like that. You know, even women, and I believe that even women after hysterectomy, they can still reclaim that cervical pleasure, even if they don't have a physical cervix. I believe that the body has the capability, even in such extreme case, to reclaim that cervical pleasure and cervical orgasm.
Wow.
So, you know, but even, you know, after menopause, after, you know, childbirth, you know, in any situation, the cervix can be resensitized and we can claim that pleasure and we can all experience cervical orgasm. Every single woman can.
Wow. Every single woman. Did you hear that, listeners? Every single woman can achieve a full body cervical orgasm that feels like oceans of pleasure.
Yes.
We need to write that down. This is what we're going for. That's amazing. I love that. Can you share with us possibly the most memorable client? Obviously not their name and address unless they're really hot. Something memorable to you.
Yeah. Okay, well, a few years ago, I was working with a lady, let's call her Tracy. So Tracy actually had vaginismus, and which is a condition where the vaginal sort of muscles and vaginal canal really tenses up during penetration, making it very painful. And, you know, the reason why she's memorable is because I had so much compassion for women with that kind of level of difficulty and struggle. Like, I've never had vaginismus. I've had a lot of painful sex in my life before I started working with my sexuality. But, you know, Tracy is so memorable because of how much courage she was bringing and self-compassion into these sessions, you know, even though it was something that we struggled with for years. And then slowly, we were working through that. And, you know, she eventually came to a point where she could have intercourse without pain. And she could even orgasm. And that's, you know, like, it's blowing my mind to witness somebody's journey. And to not only witness, but to actually hold somebody's hand and, you know, and carry somebody sort of, you know, support somebody on this kind of powerful journey from such sexual struggle to a place of healing and embracing their body and their sexuality is something beautiful, not a source of frustration, pain, and discomfort.
Oh, that is a beautiful, beautiful testimony. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And God bless you, Tracy, if you're out there. Awesome. So just finishing up, so do you have a final tip or some advice that you can leave us with?
I feel like slowing down is something we will all benefit from, you know, in the culture that, you know, uses porn as sex education, it was never intended to be, you know, it was never meant to be a sex education. So many people seem to think that fast and serious sex is a good sex. It can be, and I have nothing against quickies, but if that's all we do in our sexual life, then
boring, horrible.
It's like we're living on fast food, and we have no idea about the world of gourmet, beautiful French cuisine or Japanese cuisine, etc. So when we slow down in sex, we start to notice so much more in terms of pleasure and those embodied, you know, more kind of subtle sensations in the body. You know, to the point where we, you know, we can be actually in orgasm for the entire time, you know, of having sex, of having intercourse, because we are so connected and so resensitized, so sensitive in our bodies that, you know, even like every like little gentle movement of stroke or, you know, thrust can send us into that kind of blissful pleasure. But we really need to slow down. And be present and connected to our bodies to be able to cultivate that level of orgasmic activation and sexual activation. So slowing down, even to the point of actually being sometimes just completely still during sex. Mm-hmm. You know, body still connected, penis in the vagina or whatever is happening, and just completely becoming still. Like, I really love doing that actually personally myself. And noticing all that energy, all the sexual charge, all the pleasure in the body. That is magic. And that actually trains the body to go deeper and deeper into that, our sexual potential.
I've just gotten so much from this. This is amazing stuff. And even men, though, I really feel for men, especially as they're getting older, that erection issues. It's so hard oh, God, here I go again, all the puns. It's really difficult for men, though, that are facing, you know, erection issues, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
I feel for them. Exactly. What can we say? What can we say to our brothers to help them with their, you know, erection issues?
What really helps actually, which might sound counterintuitive, but what actually helps is to embrace the fact that the body is changing with age.
Okay.
You know, a lot of men, you know, can compare their current sexual experience to what it was back when they were in their 20s. And, you know, when a man is in his 20s, there's so much activation and charge in the genitals that it becomes almost overwhelming. As in, you know, a young man can have an erection whether he wants it or not. You know,
yes.
That's so strong. But with age, the sort of the body's, attention or focus shifts from the genitals to the heart. And then, so, you know, in those kind of later years, the man's body naturally wants to more connect to the heart than to his penis. So the reason why this is helpful to sort of accept that and be okay with that is that then we stop placing such expectation or pressure on our body to perform, and then that erection can actually happen more easily. Because as long as a man is sort of tensing up and efforting and struggling to create a stronger erection, that's when the body will struggle.
Right.
Because relaxation promotes erection, whereas tension and anxiety actually inhibit erection. So actually being okay and much more relaxed about the erections will promote their strength. But another thing is also that disconnection. A lot of men are fairly disconnected from their penises, you know, either through their own some kind of repressive upbringing or maybe, you know, different experiences. The Me Too movement, as much as it was amazing for women, it also, you know, had a sort of a negative effect on men who, you know, and many men became also almost scared of being connected to their sexuality because they were worried about being seen as aggressive. So sort of reclaiming that connection with the penis through, you know, the way I was describing for a woman reclaiming her connection and her sensitivity in the cervix, in the same way a man can actually start spending more time massaging his penis, feeling his penis, and reclaiming that sensitivity, which will lead to stronger erection.
That's beautiful. That is perfect advice. Do you hear that out there? Perfect advice. That is great. Thank you so much, Helena, for joining us. And I know that you do have courses online, and you also do you're taking clients, so people can get on your website. And in the show notes, we're going to put a lot of links, and we're going to put your website, and people can actually have sessions with you. These days in COVID-19, it's obviously over Zoom and things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah,
how can people go that want to reach out to you and go further with you in helping them in their sexual journey? How can they find you, or what's the best way to do this?
The best way is to jump on my website, helenaanista.com. There's information there about sessions with me, but also about all of my online courses. And these are actually quite powerful because I've been teaching and working with people for so many years now. I have actually put in my courses all the like answers to all the questions that people ask me most frequently. So this is a great place to start. But obviously, I also provide customized one-on-one sessions over Zoom to people all over the world. And when I can, I provide workshops and I speak at different festivals and events. Obviously, not at the moment, but that will be back at some point as well. But yeah, my website is definitely the best place to learn more about me and my work and how to work with me.
Honestly, I feel so much lighter. It's actually very liberating. It's, you know, lifting, you know, the label of shame and embarrassment and awkwardness all from this. I thank you. I really applaud you because it's a very brave occupation for you to have. You know, you open yourself up to a lot of mocking, a lot of criticism. It's just as very so well done you. You know, you found your power and you went for it. No, I really do sincerely like to congratulate you because it's a miracle after what everything that you've experienced personally. You've taken that and you've turned it into gold, and you're helping others. That's you know, admirable. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I am so passionate about my work. Thank you for acknowledging that.
No problem. You're wonderful. Thank you, Helena. We'll talk soon. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. So until next time, tribe, I'm jumping out of the passenger seat, closing the door, going inside and having a vino. Let's get together real soon. God bless.